Okay, so I decided this week we're going to do something a little... Do you have a sheet?
I do.
Okay. That we do something, I wouldn't say like entirely different, but a little different in the sense that we are, this year, Baruch Hashem, we have 4 weeks of Mishkan. Truma Tetzaveh, we'll have Kitis in the middle, and then we're going to have Yaakov Pekudei. Because there's no double, I think there's no doubles. Truma Tetzaveh at least is not doubled, that's for sure. Is the Yaakov Pekudei doubled? Actually, I should check. No, right, they're all not, there's no doubles. So we have a lot of weeks of the Mishkan. And what usually happens during the weeks of the Mishkan is we talk about, you know, what's going on with the Arod, the Menorah, da, da, right? We have to explain these things and why we have them. And through this, not all of the Rishonim agree that we should even be doing that. Meaning, there's actually quite an interesting debate in
that we should be doing what?
Understanding and giving explanations for why Hashem created certain mitzvos. So this is sort of like a more general topic in general. I should say general twice. But what I thought we'd do today, actually, is talk about why it is that certain mitzvos seem random and don't make sense. Are they random? Do they not make sense? Are they just random to us, but they really do make sense? So I wanted to take a look at that. It's a machlokas between the Rashi, the Rambam, and the Mor Nevuchim about like this question. And I think that it'll kind of like be like, I think, in a certain sense, an introduction to more conversations about, well, why is the menorah like this? And why is the Aron like that? And why did Hashem make the Mishkan built this way and not that way? And then, right, which like, should we even be having that conversation?
Are we allowed a question?
Are we allowed a question? Right. What about when their mitzvahs don't make sense to us?
Yiddishkeit is all about questions.
It's a very, I have to say, as rabbi, vayikra is hard, but Truma Tetzaveh V'Yaakov Pekudei is hard to teach, like in shul, give meaningful drushos, because like, I don't know, like, whatever, that's what Hashem says. Like, why is it like this and not like that? I don't know. Right, so we find the Mefarshim come up with all these like beautiful explanations and does everyone agree that we should even be doing that? Right? So I want you to turn to source number one. Take a look. So we're not going to like really take apart any pasuk in Parshas Truma per se this week, but it'll kind of open up all of it as we move along.
It's just interesting also because like we just were kind of getting our first set of laws in Mishpatim, and all of those are either intuitive or like can very
logical
easily make sense for right. Like these are some of the rules you need for now that you're a nation and you have self-determination. So it's like really timely to do this now.
Right. And then Truma is like, make sure to put this type of skin on top of that type of skin on top of the thing and make them this big and this many cubits and that many cubits and that, you know, right? Like, why? Right? Good. So take a look at the Rambam in source number one. The Rambam in Hilchos Me'ila. Why it's at the end of Hilchos Me'ila, I don't know exactly. He writes, this is the very last halacha in Hilchos Me'ila. Me'ila is halacha that you're not supposed to make use of items that were designated to be used for the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So if someone takes a cow and says, this cow is going to be used for a korban, so I can't now go and take that cow and use it to plow my field. That would be Me'ila. I mean, you're making use of sanctified items for my personal use. You can't do that. Fine. But the Rambam, I mean, we're going to see this piece of the Rambam a little bit larger in a minute. Well, towards the end, but I wanted to show you the beginning because this is a point that we oftentimes quote and we say, but I may not have ever seen it inside. So Rambam writes the following in source number one. So this is Hilchos Me'ila, Perek Ches, Halacha Ches. He writes, V'hamishpatim, hein ha-mitzvos shita'aman galui. Right? What do we call mishpatim? We talk about two things, chukim and mishpatim, right? We usually use those phrases, right? Right, so mishpatim, so what does it mean, a chok and a mishpat?
We don't understand.
And mishpat is very, makes a lot of sense, right? Rational, right? So this idea.
Mostly civil.
Right. So the reason, this idea, this distinction actually comes from this Rambam. So the Rambam says, mishpatim hein ha-mitzvah sheta'aman galui. Right? Mishpatim are mitzvahs that their reason is revealed. V'tovas asiyasam ba'olam hazeh yadua. And the goodness that comes with doing these things in this world is understood, right? Kigon iser gezel v'shvichas damim v'kibud aveim. You shouldn't steal things from people. You shouldn't murder people. You should be nice to your parents. These are things that if you ask a person, like, do you want to live a good life in this world? Right? These are things that a person would do. You do not have to be a religious Jew to believe in these concepts. You don't have to be a religious person at all. You could be just a regular person who says, I want to live life in a good way. So what am I going to do? I won't steal from people, I won't kill people, and I'll be nice to my parents. Right? These are reasonable things that a reasonable person who wants to have goodness in their life, in this world, forget like reward in the next world. It's just a reasonable, normal thing that a person would want to do. Right? So when Hashem says, don't murder people, you're like, all right. Good, I get that. That makes sense, right? That's not crazy. That's like very reasonable, right? You know, make sure not to steal, take something that doesn't belong to you. Be respectful of the parents who've raised you your whole life. These are things that we intuitively can accept, right? V'hachukim, so what is a chok? Hein ha-mitzvos she'ein ta'aman yadua. Okay, so we're going to be very specific about this language. We're going to have to see as we move along, right? He says, what does it mean? What is a chok? It is a mitzvah. She'ein, or mitzvos, she'ein ta'aman yadua.
The reason is not known.
The reason is not known. What does that mean?
It's esoteric. To us. We don't understand why Hashem commands.
So the Rambam seems to be saying,
we can't rationalize.
Right. Yeah. There's something, doesn't mean there's she'ein lo ta'am. The Rambam says there's no reason, but the reason is not known or understood to us. We don't know. Right? Amru chachamim, chukim, chaksi lacha, ve'ein lacha reshus le'harher behen. So Chazal said, Hashem made chukim. Right? I made them for you, and you don't have permission to argue with them. Or laharher lehen really literally means to think things about them. What is that? What do you mean laharher? What does that mean?
Judge it.
Yeah. So to think things about it, I mean like to question it. Right? To say like, what? Right? Like, Hashem said? That's like the most anti-Western thing today, right? Like, because I said so. Because I said so. There's nothing in the Western world that goes with because I said so. No such thing, right? Ask any, right? Fine.
Except the parents.
The Western world, I don't even think parents, right? Parents are the source of all of our problems. And we have to, right? Everyone's there because of their parents. And our parents ruined my life. Am I right? Yeah. Right? This there's nothing because I said so anymore. Yeah, what?
Lehar
hair
means to judge.
Lehar hair. Isn't here who our thoughts. They're right. Literally thoughts. Here who raim our thoughts. But the truth is, so here who raim raim are negative thoughts. Yeah, okay. But I do think that the word hear her has a negative connotation. I do think you're right. That lehar hair acharav means to think negatively. About it, presumably. I really think that's what it means. That's certainly the context here. Mm-hmm. You don't have rishus. I mean to think. I don't have rishus to think about it. No, it means to be like, huh, I don't think so. That's kind of weird. Doesn't make sense. Da, 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 right? Right? And by the way, if you hear this language, this would explain to you why, like classically, a lot of times in certain places for many, many years, kid would ask a question and the teacher would say, we don't ask questions like that. Right? Which I think a lot of us feel like that's not so good. I don't subscribe to
it. Depends.
But there are certainly places. There are even places like that today, right? Where that a kid will get a response. I don't think that's right. I personally don't subscribe to that approach. I don't think it's smart and whatever. But you can see where it might emanate from, even part of it, right? Okay. But let's keep going. And what happens? V'yitzro shal adam nokvo bahen. And not only are these things, they don't make any sense to us because we don't understand them, and it also, a person's yetzer, a person's, you know, inner world or thoughts or concerns or worries, it bugs them, right? It nokvo, like it pushes them, it makes them think, right? V'umo sa'ola mishivin aleihem, and the non-Jewish community responds to it and says, like, kagon, right? I mean, he responds like, that's ridiculous, right? Kigon, iser basar chazir, right? Why can't I eat bacon? I don't know. Is it more unhealthy than, some really fatty chopped liver or steak or whatever? That's also not so much worse than fried salami. It's also bad for you, right? Like, I don't know who decides it's because it's so bad for you. Right? It's not so simple, right? And so it makes people question. Ubasar b'chalav. I can't have a cheeseburger. Is a cheeseburger so worse than there are other, kosher things that are really bad for you also? Like, who said, right? The egla arufa, or this idea right here that they would kill that the young eagle if, you know, a young calf, if someone's body was found outside a city, right? Upara aduma.
That should be mishpatim,
egla rufa. Yeah, I hear you. I agree with you. I wouldn't necessarily put it there. Egla rufa is like, it's social responsibility for each other. Yeah, correct. But there are pieces of it that don't necessarily make sense. But I'm killing an animal. You just upset someone got killed, so I kill something else. Like, it's like, you can make that argument, right? Vipara aduma, right? The most classic, the red heifer, right? That's the most classic. It makes no sense. The person who becomes tamei has to get more yucky things sprinkled on them, and the person who does it, they get become tahar. The person who's sprinkling them themselves becomes tamei. Right? Paraduma is the most classic example. Right? Seir hamishtaleach. Why am I taking a goat and throwing it off a cliff? And that gives me tshuva. Like, what is that about? Right? Yeah, and other examples.
In the history, the Wall Street Journal had about this, the goat.
Yeah.
Yes. You saw that? Was discussing it. I didn't read the article.
The goat that goes off the cliff. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. Yes, yeah. But the point being, the Rambam is saying, and shatnez, right? I can't remember a little wool together. Why? Who cares? Right? I can't give you a rational explanation, right, for why that's true, right? So this is the Rambam. This Rambam is, I think, relatively known to us to a certain extent. This distinction chok versus mishpat. Mishpat is a thing that makes logical sense. I would expect
society
gets it. It makes sense. Chok is, holy cow, what are you talking about? Why? And not only that's the Rambam, and it digs at us sometimes. Like, I don't know. Like, why not? Right? And it's a little bit harder, a little more difficult to accept. That's the concept. Fine. The Rambam, so far we said, doesn't think that chukim have no reason, but they have reasons that we don't understand. At least that seems to be what he's saying so far. Fine. That presumably that's what he's saying, right? We'll see. Okay. Take a look at the next pasuk. Source number 2 is a pasuk actually in Parshas Kedoshim. As chukosai tishmru, you should keep my chukim. Behem techa lo sarbir kilayim, sadcha lo sizra kilayim, ubegi kilayim shanes lo yalelecha. So this is actually 3 examples of what we call kilayim, but they're 3 different examples. One of them is, you can't have 2 animals that don't go together, right? Like a ox and a donkey. You make them plow together. That's kilayim. Okay? Sorry. No, I'm wrong. I'm totally wrong. That's not true. That's a separate halacha. That's a true halacha. That's not kilayim. Kilayim here is 2 animals that are not the same mating together. Mating together. Okay? So a donkey and a horse, which makes a mule, right? That's what happens. So you can't do that. You're not allowed to mate 2 animals that are not the same. Okay? You can't do that. You can't, and you say, why not? Make some mule. That's great. That's helpful. Right? Okay? You can't do that. Sad chalo sizra kilayim. You can't plant 2 species next to each other that they're going to mix together.
Is that how a mule came into existence?
I think so. I don't know. Yeah. I think so, right? Yes? There you go. Jess says yes. I think that's true. That's where a mule comes from. A mule is a donkey horse together. Yeah. So you also can't make kilayim. You can't make kilayim in a field. Like, so for example, does anybody here really like clementines? Is that clementines, right? Clementines are kilayim, actually. You can eat them. You can eat them. You can eat them. You're allowed to eat them.
Clementines?
I think so, right? They're necked. I think they're...
You mean like a pluma?
No, I think...
No, clementine. So it's like an orange.
It's an orange and a tangerine or something.
Oh, okay.
So what is it that we can eat those?
So you can eat them, but you can't make them. You can't make them. Oh, you can't plant that. You can't take 2 species.
We have 100 changes we can go on here. We're not allowed to benefit from the conversation.
Correct. But this one, you're allowed to benefit, you're just not allowed to make. Fine. And the third one, begging, kilayim shanez, is you're not allowed to have, every time I buy a new suit, so I have to go, this one applies to half the times men more than women sometimes. But like every time you buy a new suit, you got to take it to the shanez guy to put his stamp of approval on it, that you don't have some, on a wool suit, some linen in the collar or something, whatever. Mm-hmm. We still do this to check. Fine. So like, right? So, explain that one to me. I don't know. My clothing has to be kosher. What?
It's like suit stores know when we.
Yeah, they know. Yeah, yeah. They know. House, yeah.
And
no, it doesn't have.
He saw he had to keep it. He's like, don't worry, this
is open. Have
these ones.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. So these are quintessential chukim, right? Why not? Clementines are delicious. So what's wrong with the mule? What's wrong? Who cares? It's no moral problem. Okay. So Rashi says, "Es chukosai tishmru." Source number 3. Ve'elu hein. And what are these? Chukim? Behem techalo sarbiya kalayim, etc., etc., etc. And says Rashi, chukim elu gzeros hamelech she'ein ta'am ladavar. Chukim are gzeros hamelech.
Decrees
of the king. She'ein ta'am ladavar. That?
There's no reason for.
Ah.
Well, Well, that's different. Does
that sound
saying,
the same as the Rambam?
No, the Rambam says we don't know.
There is no reason, says Rashi.
Right.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. And by the way, if there's no reason, no reason,
right,
then are we, should we go searching for beautiful explanations for mitzvos? Or for certainly for chukim?
Is it chutzpahdik to say there's no reason for something God commands?
Okay, so that's the opposite, right? One is, what? No reason? This is Ribbono Shel Olam. He makes mitzvos that have no reason.
Right. You don't know the reason, but there's still a reason.
This, okay, you maybe argue Rashi. Maybe Rashi doesn't mean that. Maybe Rashi means not Tom. We know. But he does say no reason. Has no reason.
It's ledavar, not ledaber. Because
ledavar.
It's
ledavar. I'm almost positive. You could look it up. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
He means absolutely no reason. But we should check now that you brought it up. This lead is.
I believe you. I'm just trying to rationalize it in my
don't
head.
Don't believe
now.
Me. Don't take my word. Remember that, LeVar Burton? Don't take my word for it.
It's Vayikra Yud Tes.
Vayikra Yud Tes. Yud Tes. Oh, this doesn't have nekudos either. It's not
yeah,
this.
That's why I'm wondering. Rashi doesn't have nekudos.
Well, some Rashis do, but this one does not. This is not going to help us.
Okay, we'll go with your explanation.
All right, I think it's ladavar. I'm fairly certain.
Because like on the one hand, I'm like
also in tam ladaber is not a phrase that usually you would see here probably. Yeah.
Okay, so like I personally don't have a problem accepting that like Hashem made some chukim. Wait, not as a test, but like let's say it's a test.
Yeah.
Like I just said it's
could be a
rule.
Test.
Just follow it because I said
could
it's
a rule,
and that's
could be
it.
A test. Yeah,
which is fine, but it's like why do you need so many of them then?
Right,
like one would be enough to,
right.
to prove like I'm
to fill it in, right.
just because you said so.
Right,
so
good. By the way, I'll give you a proof for Rashi's approach that saying that we have reasons for the mitzvos is not acceptable. How do I know? Or at least some. All right, this is even more extreme. Look at the Gemara in source number 4. The Gemara in source number 4, it's a Mishnah in Gemara. The Gemara Mishnah in Megillah says the following, Ha'omer, we're not going to explain all these things, but Ha'omer yivarchucha tovim harezu derech aminah, so I'm going to get to this. The next one. If a person says, Al-kan sipur yagiru rachamecha, va'tov yizacher shemecha, modim, mishatkin osof. If a person is a shlich tzibur, they're davening from the Amud, and they forget the fact that in this case they're like going off, they're going off the usual script, whatever. The person says, Hashem, just like you take care of the mother bird and you have rachmanas on her, have rachmanas on us also. The person says that, mishatkin us, literally means we quiet him up, we take him off. You're not allowed to continue dominating. That's such a nice thing to say, isn't it nice? Just like Hashem, you made a mitzvah, right, that you don't take the baby, you shoo the mother bird away, she shouldn't see, it's a rachmanas, etc., right? If you say that, remove him from the Amud. Can't daven him from the Amud. Bad shliach tzibur. Why is that? Says the Gemara. Next paragraph. Ela akan tzibur yagir achamecha. My time. Why? Pligi ba trei amarai b'marav. There are two amarayim who lived in amarayim. People who lived in the time of the Mishnah are called Tanayim. Some of the time who lives in the Gemara is called an Amora. So the year between the year 300 to 500, something like that. So two amarayim in Eretz Yisrael b'marav. The Gemara in the time of Bavli, written in Bavel, Babylonia, which is to the east of Israel. Anything they talk about Ma'arava, the west, they're referring to Israel. So there are two Tanaim in Israel who disagreed. Rabbi Yossi bar Avin, Rabbi Yossi bar Zvida. Two Rabbi Yossis who had different fathers, bar Avin and Zvida. Chad Amar, bin p'nei shemato kina b'maisa b'reishis. One says it's because you make the rest of creation feel jealous. Hashem only has rachmanis on birds, has never rachmanis on lions or on cheetahs, or on giraffe, or on, I don't know, inchworms, right? Why is it only birds? So it's not right to say that Hashem is rachman, it's only on, fine. Second answer. Chad amar, b'mipnei she'oseh midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachamim, ve'einan ela gezeros. Because you portend to know that Hashem's mitzvos are because he has rachamim. Who says?
Oh.
Maybe it's not rachamim. This is a gzeira. Hashem made a decree. You shoo away the mother bird because he cares about mother birds. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't care about mother birds. This is the halacha, right? But what's that really about? Probably. What's the real concern there? If you say it's all Hashem's reason. Okay, so you don't know Hashem's reason. But what will happen if I presume that I know Hashem's reasons?
I could be wrong, and then I might not want to
observe
the mitzvah
if okay.
I don't agree with good. What I think his reason
good.
Is.
Good, so it's only based on what my understanding of the mitzvah, so if I don't understand or I don't agree, etc., yeah?
You make assumptions, then you apply that logic to other things.
You can misapply.
That's dangerous.
Good, you can misapply the logic. It's like, oh, the reason Hashem didn't want me to shoot the mother bird is because she's going to see and be upset. But this mother bird I know is not a rachman. This mother bird doesn't care about her baby. So this one I don't have to. Or this mother bird is blind. I don't know, whatever example is, right? In this case, it's not going to apply because this is the rule. So when the rule doesn't apply, this is the rationale. When the rationale doesn't apply, maybe I can get rid of the mitzvah. Right? And if I can start to make my rationale, oh, the reason why we can't have meat and milk is because that was what the non-Jews did. And if we let the meat and milk, we're going to pay. No, but we'll make a totally kosher, only Jewish Bus Bachalov restaurant. So you don't have, sorry, like, once you explain reasons for mitzvos, so then you could distort anything that you'd like, right? You make it fit your narrative all of a sudden, right? Yeah. So the Chazal say, sorry, Charlie, don't tell me. Not because it may not be true. Maybe it's not is true. I don't know. Maybe Hashem's nice to birds. I don't know. And by the way, some of the Rishonim say the reason for Shiloh HaKein is to show Rachmanas to birds. Some think that. But the point is that don't pretend that you know that. Yeah. You don't know. Yeah. And since you don't know, don't say. And if you get up publicly and declare that Hashem is Rachmanas on birds, that's dangerous.
But there are different kinds of birds also.
Yes, there are different kinds of birds, yeah.
You say so-and-so rabbi says that.
Okay, right. But to say Hashem has Rachmanas on birds,
right.
No. So that, and that kind of fits a little bit with Rashi's narrative of like, sorry. Like there's something you don't know. You don't know. This Kabbalah could fit with the Rambam said also. It could fit the Rambam also. Rambam is saying there's reasons we don't know, mm-hmm. right? So that the Kabbalah seems to fit a little bit more with that. Rashi still sounds a little more extreme, mm-hmm. which is there are no reasons, right? If that's what he really means, but that's what it sounds like. Yeah, fine.
Some birds are vultures, and some birds, you know, they're different kinds of birds.
Mm-hmm. And they're not Rachmanim. Those birds. Is that what you mean?
Some people are
both. Yeah. Yeah, it's also true. Okay, so take a look at source number 5. Source number 5 is a quote from the Kuzari. A couple of these sources I have for you in English, which is, you know, good. A little easier. The Kuzari is a fascinating work. It's not always as easy to get through all the pieces here, so I like when excerpts are very, like, helpful. But it's a very interesting book. The Kuzari is a book written by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. He also wrote many of the kinos. Some of the keynotes that I read on Tisha B'Av, he was a poet, Talmid Chacham. He's very, very interesting.
Israel,
yes,
Mara,
yes.
And then he just was trampled by.
Yes, when he arrived, the stairs
on his arrival,
the stairs down to the Kotel, I think are called named after Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. I think.
Really?
I think so. I think that's true. Okay, he had tremendous, tremendous desire to be in Eretz Israel. Yes, absolutely. He writes very, very powerful language. He actually has a beautiful language in the Kuzari, where the Kuzari is the king of the Kuzars, and there's this Jew who's talking to him about philosophy. He makes like this storyline, but it's to discuss Jewish philosophy. So at one point, the king of the Kuzar says to the Jew, it's Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is just their author, right? He's not the one in the story. So he says to him, you know, like you guys always daven, like, you know, but like you don't go. And so the Jew says back to the Melech Kuzar, he says, I'm an answer for you. Since you're right, I'm a hypocrite. And he says, you're right, I should. I have nothing to say. He basically says, like, you're right, we should. Nothing to say. It's a very beautiful line. So fine. So look what he says here. Hili Kuzari writes the following. It is God's Torah, and he who accepts it completely, without any investigation, without any contemplation, is greater than one who becomes more knowledgeable and investigates. Wow.
Wow.
That's
very judgmental.
Wow. The individual, however, who has turned from this higher level towards the path of investigation should find a reason for these things rather than leaving them and turning to incorrect thoughts and doubts that lead him to be lost. What does that mean?
Kind of what you were just saying. Like, you don't want to misascribe. You don't want to make the wrong assumption and then think the wrong thing. Like, if you have doubts or questions, like, then you should chase them. You shouldn't just necessarily ignore them. But
right.
Like, it's better to just be able to accept it without question.
It's sort of saying both things at the same time, sort of, right?
Right.
It's sort of two things, right? On the one hand, the ideal is, Hashem said, What's the reason? My joke in my house. Ah, but what's the reason for this mitzvah? Because Hashem said so. Okay. That's what my kids do. Right? But like, it's not a joke. Right? The ultimate answer, right, in the end of the day is going to be, why do we do X, Y, Z? The answer is, that's what Hashem said. Unless it's a Darabanan. Hashem didn't say. Hashem said this into the rabbis. Fine. But that is ultimately where we should be. To a certain extent, we should be in a place. This is what the Kuzari is saying. I'm not saying that. No. But the Kuzari seems to say, the ultimate place to be is, this is the Gzeiros HaMelech, is what Hashem said. We believe in Hashem. Hashem gave us the Torah. We do what the Torah says. Finished. End of story. However, he says, a person has to know himself. Right? And for many people, I'll include myself in this camp, understanding, right, what these mitzvahs are really about and getting a better understanding of them can really help a person, right, feel more connected to the mitzvahs. Right? Mm-hmm. And it helps you instead, if everything is just because I said so, with no explanation and no understanding and no time and no, you know, like sweetness. So then it's hard. It's hard to feel connected to mitzvahs that you just because I said so. Because I said so, like it's like robotic, and it's hard for people to feel connected that way. And therefore, it says the Kuzari, it's not a bad idea for a person to investigate and understand what the mitzvahs are really about, even though ultimately we do have to come to a place of I'm going to accept it no matter what. Mm-hmm. Right? This is the way that I was taught always as like, I think in all like my Tanakh classes, like either in high school or like even I think later on, and that was like the approach I always kind of heard from a lot of my teachers, which was like that basically this idea of what's called ta'amei ha-mitzvos, right? Do we try to give reasons for the mitzvos? So the answer is that ultimately the answer is no. Right? We don't really do there's a machlokas about this question. Mm-hmm. Ta'amei ha-mitzvos. Do I try to understand why Hashem made a mitzvah? The answer is ultimately we really paskin that it's a machlokas about darshinan time of the kra or ain darshinan time of the kra. Do we make a drusha on the reasons for mitzvos? Because sometimes the Torah actually tells us why. And sometimes the Torah doesn't tell us why, but maybe we can figure out why. And the answer is we paskin that we don't do that. We don't say, this mitzvah is because of X or Y or Z. That we don't do, right? Why? For the reasons that we mentioned, because then people can do all kinds of things, right? But that doesn't mean we don't spend time understanding rationale that could be the reason. We might have 37 possibilities, well, right, at a good shear.
Not just the reason. We want to understand the whole mitzvah, all aspects of it.
Right, but there's two pieces. One is understanding how to do the mitzvah correctly.
Right.
But the other part is, that's a different part. That everyone would agree. You have to understand the details, how to do it right. But this is like, do I want to send perspectives on the mitzvah? And so what many Rishonim assume is that it is appropriate, and the Kuzari is certainly saying that, it's appropriate to understand the rationale behind mitzvahs, not to say that we do them because of those reasons. We do them anyways. But having rationale helps, yeah.
That's how we live every day now. Okay, that's how we live every day.
What do you mean?
We don't understand.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's true. But I will say that it's hard to continue that way.
Very hard.
Forever.
Yeah.
To simply say all the time, I'm just going to do it because God said so. It's hard. It's a hard thing to...
You feel bad sometimes when you question, but you can't help yourself but question.
Yeah, that's normal to question.
I think there's a difference between looking for a reason for something and trying to look for, I don't even like the word rationale, but like trying to find some connection so that you can assign meaning to it for you.
Perspective.
Right.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be, it's not the reason. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not that I have the reason for the mitzvah, but there's understandings within the mitzvah that are so beautiful sometimes, right? That are so, like, that really help us. You're like, wow, like, that's a beautiful mitzvah, mm-hmm. right? Even if it doesn't mean that I only do it because that's the reason.
Yeah. Right? And also, like, the process of trying to figure out the reason for a mitzvah, air quotes reason, that you're learning Torah in doing that. Bingo. And that's a mitzvah, so that's Bingo. A good thing to be learning Torah, right? And to try to discover.
It's basically what we do every week.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we do here. We basically try to take apart mitzvahs and understand what's going on and what are the messages, how can we take those messages and use them in our lives. You use the mitzvahs and rationale even, right? Whatever you want to call it, perspectives, to elevate ourselves because we live an elevated life when we have an understanding of what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we feel connected. And even when that rationale doesn't apply, we do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like the balance, right? The Ramban says something similar, and he's very strong. He feels very strongly about this. So on the same pasuk where Rashi says, talks about kilayim, right? This idea of shatnez, etc., and that these are chukim, right? Chukim that have no reason. The Ramban a little bit takes offense, and he says the following: So he quotes Rashi, right? Lashon Rashi, the first line. He says that he quotes Rashi's what Rashi said. Elu gzeiros hamelach she'ein tam ladavar. Lashon Rashi. V'lo hiskiru rabbeinu sheyihye hatam ne'elam. Chazal never said that the reason should be lost from us. V'shiyu yetzer hara v'umos olam eshivim aleihem, or that, you know, the yetzer hara and the rest of the world should attack it. Ela b'levisha shatnis lo b'kilei behema. He goes, that's only true by wearing shatnis, not by baiting animals together. Okay, fine, but let's go to the main point. Next line. If you flip the page, ve'ena kavana behem. Right? This doesn't mean that this is the decree of the king with, you know, in every place with absolutely no reason. Hashem says things, they have meaning, right? Hashem says something, it's God, right? Rak hachukim heim gzeres hamelach asher yachuk b'malchuto belish yigale tolatam la'am. Rather, they are laws that are a decree of the king that he places in his kingdom, right? Yachuk, right, is language of to like.
So?
No.
and I meant like the plow kind of thing.
No, to what's the word? Like when you dig out stone, chisel in, yeah, like make it very, very, you know, you carve it in stone. Think Yahoo, because like to carve it out, right? I was right when I was doing this, right? But why? Without revealing their reasons to his nation. Okay, it's similar to the way the Rambam seems to say it, right? That Hashem, he does not like this language of Rashi. Ein tam ladavar. And you can see that we're reading the Rashi right, because the Ramban is very upset with that idea. And there's no reason. There are reasons that we don't know, right? Ve'ena am nehanim bahem. And the nation can't like enjoy it, right? Avam harhari machareim belibam umekablen osam liras hamalchus, right? But the people kind of like, you know, they think about it. They're not so sure. But nevertheless, even with the challenge of being maharher achareim that they sometimes question a little, in the end of the day, they accept. I actually like that. I he doesn't need my example. People. I like the language of the Ramban there, right? Because what's he basically saying?
It's okay to question and struggle with things as long as at the end of the day we accept it even when we don't find it.
But he's not saying, the Ramban's not saying, if you don't like the answer, you don't have an answer, you cannot ask.
Right.
Or you cannot struggle. It doesn't say that. Maharim Arahim. It does. It makes us struggle. It does. It's hard. It's a hard thing. It's struggle. Sometimes it's hard. That's okay. We don't get it. Does it make me... I once asked Rabbi Tversky this a question like this about questions, I guess it was questions of faith. I don't remember exactly what my question was exactly, but I asked him a question like that, like, how does a person manage, like, you keep going through life even though you have certain questions? So he answered me with Gemara terminology. In the Gemara, when the Gemara raises a question, you say someone says something, the Gemara says, well, what about this? The Gemara says, kasha. So kasha means?
It's a question.
Good question, but.
We don't know the answer.
But, no, not even what I'm saying. Good question, but we're not going to. We're not abandoning our approach. Fair. It's sort of like fair point. Fair point, but I'm not changing my opinion. That's what Gemara says, basically. Kasha. Right? It's a fair point. I'm not saying it's nothing, but onward. When the Gemara says tiyufta, that means this is a contradiction. Maybe we brought something that's a contradiction, and I have to backtrack on what I said before. Ooh, you brought another Mishnah that says different than what I said. Tiyufta. I'm excoriated. I'm wrong. I'm done. And I have to go back and try again, because what I said was incorrect. So Ratursky said to me, he said, it's fine to have questions, right? Questions fine. He goes, as long as they're kashas and not tiyuftas. He says, it's okay. He says, questions that make you like decide to not observe anymore, so that's not, that can't be reconciled with your religious belief, right? But to go through life with, meaning, by the way, some people will have those, and then they have to manage that also. But his point was like, but to have a question you don't understand, unresolved concern about Yiddishkeit, join the club. Right? We're all like that, right? So he said, Kasha is a sefer. You don't know? You don't understand? Why does Hashem do X? I don't know. Why does Hashem say kill Amalek? I don't know. Babies. I don't know. Right? So I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. That's okay. I can still get up in the morning and put my tefillin. And it doesn't make me, right, like, become not, decide not to observe Yiddishkeit because of that. That's okay. We are all left with unresolved questions like that. Right?
What's the root of Tiyufta?
What's the root of Tiyufta?
Yeah, what is the
root? I don't know the root. It's an Aramaic word. I don't know. I can find a few. But it means to contradict. To contradict. So, but the point being, and I like that's why I like this Ramban. And you're going to fight with it. You're going to have a hard time with it. And then at the end of the day, you're going to say, okay, I don't really get it, but I'm going to do it anyways because Hashem said so. Right? And that's okay. That's part of the job. That's part of what we do. That's part of the commitment. Fine. And he says, V'chein chukei HaKadosh Baruch Hu heim hasodos asher lo batorah she'ein ha'am mechash b'machshavatam nehenim behem kimishvatim. And that's what chukim are. Chukim are mitzvos that have their secrets of the Torah. That the regular person doesn't have in their mind the ability to understand and appreciate. Aval kulam betam nachon v'to'el shleima. But every one of them has a reason. Everyone has a reason. Don't ever say, says Rashi, that the Ramban says back to Rashi, that there's no reason. Of course there's a reason. You bum show them. Hashem made a mitzvah. He made it nonsense. Wear polka dot pajamas when you go to sleep because I said so. That's not true. There's some reason. We don't understand. It's secret. It's a secret. There are certain things about the Kodesh Baruch Hu that we're not going to understand. Certain things about the Torah we're not going to understand. And by the way, that's itself a good training ground for life, right? To have, unfortunately, things like this we don't understand. Fine. I want to skip. We basically saw already what the Rambam says. We can skip source 7 for right now. Basically, the Rambam says that a person. Well, I'll just show you the top. Just look at the top for a second. Source number 7. The Rambam, because we're running out of time. Ro'oi la'adam lehisbonim b'mishpatei ha'Torah ha'kadosha. It is a good thing, appropriate for a person to think about the mitzvahs of the Torah and to know sof inyanam, like to know like what they're really about, kefi kocha, according to a person's abilities. And if a person finds them and doesn't have a reason, v'lo yeda lo ila al yihi kal be'inav, v'lo yaharos lalos el Hashem pen yifrotzbo. Don't say, I don't have a reason, so now I'm going to step away from Hashem. Don't do that. Right? Don't do that. And don't think about it like other things. Okay, other things. Something doesn't make sense. All right, it's nonsense. No, the Torah's not nonsense. The Torah's real. I don't understand it. That's okay. Something I don't understand right now. That's fine. Right? But his point is, you know, that there is this, you know, value in understanding and trying to figure it out. Because the Rambam does believe there are reasons for the mitzvah like the Ramban does. One interesting thing, though, he says in source number 8, and this is what's a little funny. This is in the Mor Nevuchim, and the God reflects, he writes, the mitzvah obligating us to bring offerings has great purpose. Why, however, one offering must be a lamb while another a ram? Why a fixed number must be brought? We simply cannot say. Anyone who attempts to find reasons for such details enters, in my eyes, into the realm of absurdity. Whoever claims that these detailed rules have specific reasons which he can identify is as distant from the truth as those who assume that the whole law has no purpose.
Wow.
Interesting. So the Rambam was like, so he says you should go find reasons. But it is interesting that within a certain level of detail, even the Rambam agrees like, I don't know. Would the Ramban agree with that? I'm not sure. I think the Ramban would say no to that. The Ramban was like horrified at the idea of saying that anything in the Torah has no specific reason. The Rambam seems to kind of like play both ways. On the one hand, he thinks there's a lot of value. Mitzvahs do have a reason. But like 6 rams and 7 oxen, and they're not, he's not so sure. Which I think is interesting.
Well, I haven't read more in the book, but I feel like in context of what the work is, maybe this is like
more complicated.
This is something for you to explore. This is where it's like, just don't bother. Like,
yes,
I would draw the line here.
Right.
Like looking at the numbers.
Right. But it's interesting. Okay. Yeah. But I'll show you one last thing. And one last source is that Kayas Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak Arama, also a very, you know, philosophical thinker. He wrote commentaries in the Torah, but a just very philosophical thinker. He writes, consider how meticulous divine wisdom was in the construction of the menorah. This will be next week, right? We're going to talk about the kelim of the Mishkan. Its form, its shape, its dimensions, its image. It is inconceivable that these matters could possibly have been recorded in the divine law by chance. Bear in mind that if one letter of a Torah scroll is missing, or one letter is superfluous, the entire Torah is disqualified. Far be it from the God who fashioned us to command us to record in his perfect Torah all these details simply for the sake of human adornment. Meaning, there is a reason for every single thing that Hashem commanded. And that's why, right, to understand what's happening in the Mishkan has value. It's not, it's hard. It's hard when you sit in shul and they're reading like, and this thing, and this thing, and this thing, and this thing, and then Be'alcha Pekuda, get ready, they say all this stuff again, right? It's hard to sometimes appreciate it, right? But I think the point is, or I don't know, one of the points, I think, is to recognize, again, you could go with Rashi. There's no, something just having no reason. I have that, that's hard for me, Rashi's approach, right? I like the Ramban's intensity. Like, there's no such thing as, that works for me. But like, but the point is, sometimes we see things that feel like the rationale, like it's far from us to understand. And the answer is, it is sometimes. But it doesn't mean that it's nonsense. And for me, the my kids will sometimes ask me this question, like, why do you believe in da 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 da? You know? And I'll sometimes say, like, there's enough in the vastness of Torah. This is just my personal feeling. There's so much in the vastness of Torah to me that's like so incredible and smart and sophisticated and like, be honest, like works for me. Like I'm in, you know, that I can take along the parts that I struggle with, that I have a hard time understanding. To me, there's too much good there, right? For me to say, oh, well, that piece I don't get. First of all, I know like how smart I am and how smart I'm not, fine. But like, you know, even like within humans and certainly with God, like, I don't get it. And I think it takes a certain
yet,
yeah. But but by the way, I may not ever. Some of it.
So yet, because you might get.
It still is yet. But I'm saying, but even if it's like, this is something that I just feel like I'll never really understand fully, right?
And then 2 years from now, you may have a different perspective.
There you go. You guys are very nice to me. Yeah, maybe. You're right. But I said you're nice to me. But my point is that, I think what I love about this approach is that it doesn't deny the value of questioning. I love that Ramban. Maharim Balibo. We think about it and we question and we can't figure it out and we don't understand. How many Talmidei Chachamim like had like crisis, existential crises and emotional crises and like really had a hard time understanding what's going on in the world and what's happening here? Why is so much suffering? There's a lot of questions in the world. It's a lot of questions. A lot of questions in the world. A lot of questions in life. A lot of questions in Torah. And like we don't ask that question. On the flip side, we're not so open to questions that we say, you know, good point, maybe you don't need this, right? We say, again, for ourselves, I can't tell anybody else what to do, but like, if you're in it, then you're in it, right? I can't be in for some and not in for others. And that's hard, but that's what commitment is, right? So that's any relationship, right? Spousal relationship, relationship with children, relationship with friends. If I'm only in when it makes sense to me, when it works for me at the time that I... So that's not a relationship. That's convenience, right? So like, there's that balance, you know. But I really want to understand. And that's any relationship, and that's a relationship with spouse also, right? The parts that we can struggle with and disagree about, and I don't understand why you want that, and I wish you wanted this, right? But we still remain committed to each other, no matter what, because there's too much there that we want to have that relationship. So we can struggle, and we have conversations, and we talk, etc. Because we need to work it through, and we're never finished. Right? No relationship is done, right? Until, you know, we're done in the world. But the point being, it's a continued conversation. And I think that same relationship with Hashem and Torah is the same. It continues to be a conversation with commitment to put two things together. I can struggle. I can be unsure. I can be worried. I can be, I don't get this one. And I can try to figure it out. And I may or may not get an answer that I like. But I stay committed because I buy into the general framework. You know, when we do that, then I think then we have a dynamic relationship with Hashem rather than a stagnant one. And rather than just a one of like, okay, fine, you said so. Which I think, and then they end up lacking a certain realness to it as opposed to a relationship which involves questions and answers and struggle because that's real. And that's a real relationship.
It reminds me of speakers from the yeshiva, Hazir
Yeshiva. Yes.
When he shared a screenshot of some conversation with that girl who was so upset. And she had said, like, I don't want to talk to Hashem. Like, I'm so angry with him. Like, and he was like, you should talk to Hashem.
When you're angry,
tell him that you're angry with him.
Yes. Beautiful. I agree with you. Yes. Beautiful idea. Like, when I'm upset with Hashem, so tell Hashem you're upset. At least do that. At least do that. Yeah, that's a real
relationship. Actually, you do when you have a relationship with someone.
There's a story about the B'ditcher Rebbe. I think I may have told you the story before. He walked into the base manager or something. We were over time here. He went walking to the base manager, and there's a Jew crying at the Aron HaKodesh, and he was screaming, "Kippy, you did this to me!" And everyone's like, "What? Like, get him out of here," you know? And the B'ditcher said, "Leave him there." He said, "Halavai, his milk cow had died. It was his whole parnasa." He was angry at Hashem. So the B'ditcher said, "Halavai, we should all be this connected to Hashem, mm-hmm. that when something happens to us, we yell and scream like he's right in front of us." Mm-hmm. You know, like halavai, like, you know, like that. The relationship should be that strong that when difficult things happen, we go to him. He's the one we go to and talk to him about it. It's not simple, but it's a conversation to continue. And Rabbi Hashem will do that with the Mishkan more next week.
Great. Thank you. Okay.